Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Glasgow, Scotland, and came to America when he was 16. He earned his way through college by leasing accordions and giving accordion lessons, and earned a B.S. in architectural engineering from Lawrence Technological University. In the late 70s, he became a pioneer in the fast oil change business by helping start Fast Oil and Lube. He believes very strongly in the value of a work ethic and giving back. His name, Tony Rea. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Tony Rea, the president and owner of Fairmount Properties and Area Construction. Tony, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you for having me, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your parents and your childhood?
Yes. My parents were both born in Italy. My dad was, when he was 14, he left Italy to go to Scotland, where his parents had emigrated to. And at the age of 25, 26 years old, my dad returned back to Italy with his mother for a prearranged marriage. And my dad didn't read or write because he didn't go to school when he was in Italy. So he never really communicated with his future bride because telephones were non-existent in Italy at the time, where he lived in the farm, and where my mother lived. So he met my mother, couldn't write to her because he was illiterate, and so he met my mother for the first time at their house, and it just so happened that he was betrothed to the older sister. And when he got to the house, he preferred the second oldest daughter, who ultimately became my mother. So 2 weeks later, my mom and dad were married and back in Scotland. And so I'm really a British subject, but I'm 100% Italian.
What did you learn from your dad, Tony, and what did you learn from your mom?
Well, both of them had an enormous work ethic. I mean, they were just they taught us from the very start that work was important in the course of life. So my dad, he worked 7 days a week, and so did my mother. My mother raised the three of my two sisters and I while she was working in the store that my dad had. It was a general store in Scotland, and we worked there. We lived there, and we lived in the back room. And that was our life.
Anybody that spends time with Tony Rea and listens to you for a half an hour, this word work ethic comes up. You earned your way through college by playing accordion and giving lessons. Where'd you learn to play the accordion?
I started my lessons back in Scotland with a teacher that wasn't an accordion teacher. He was a classical music teacher. And he was very strict, and when we came to this country, when we emigrated to the United States, I continued my lessons here only on a limited basis because of the fact that I had to work to support the family before I went to college. My two sisters and I worked, and my mother stayed at home. And my dad was in his 50s when he came to this country with no education and no trade. And so he had some relatively menial jobs initially and ultimately wound up becoming a landscaper, and because that was his hobby back home.
You actually regularly had three jobs as you worked your way through college.
Yes. During the summer, I worked in construction. During the day, in the evenings I was teaching music, and on weekends The very first job that I got when I came to this country was in a supermarket. So I worked the supermarket on weekends, and that pretty much took care of 7 days for me.
In our suburbs, many, many parents want to give their kids everything they never had. And they create entitlement kits where the kids don't want to work. The kids are laughed if they try to work. Talk to us about the value of helping young people get jobs.
Well, I think the very first thing that you have to instill in your kids is that there's really no free lunch. These kids have to be responsible. They have to know what the responsibilities are and what the rewards are from them contributing to the family. It's our family currently as a unit. We've always contributed, all of us, to whatever we've achieved. And I've had my kids, all of them. We have five children, and all of them have worked for me in some capacity when they were able to, when they reached the age of an ability to either clean some of these construction sites that we were on, working, cleaning the office, working around the house, whatever. We've never given our kids anything that they haven't earned. Everything that they've had, they've earned. My wife and I have paid for their college education. But, I think that's the one thing that we need to give our kids is a good education. And beyond that, they're basically on their own. And you teach them a set of values that that aren't particularly values that aren't materialistic, that are values that are inborn in their family values, their religion, and how they treat and deal with other people. So that's really been the focus of my wife and I's direction for our kids. And as a result, our youngest is 24, and our oldest is 41, and they're all hardworking and self-sufficient, and they don't depend on mom and dad to take care of their needs.
We're talking to Tony Rea. When we come back, we'll ask him about his days at Ford Motor Company. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Tony Rea, who worked for Ford Motor Company for 8 years as an architect. Tony, can you talk about those years?
Yes. Ford Motor Company was really good to me. I think I probably learned a lot of my business disciplines from Ford. I was surrounded by some very well-educated people, managers, supervisors that guided my path in the Ford Motor Company, and I had never seen much of the United States when I came here. We arrived in New York, came directly to Dearborn, and never was able to travel because of the work situation that I had. So after 8 years of Ford Motor Company and traveling extensively, I realized that as an architect in an automotive company, that there wasn't really much room for advancement. And I talked to my boss and also my boss's boss, who had offered me basically a position in the market representation area, which was kind of a stepping stone for further progress at the Ford Motor Company. And I decided at that point that really wasn't my expertise, that my interest, my talents were in architecture and construction. So I resigned from Ford Motor Company to start my own business.
Back in 1972, nobody left Fords. Once you had a job with Fords, you stayed for life. What did Suzanne say, and what did her parents say when you told them?
Well, my wife, Suzanne, was extremely supportive. Based on our relationship, which is great. She had complete confidence in my decisions. I mean, she knew that I was a hard worker, and her parents did too. And none of them were concerned. I was the one that was concerned. When we lived in Dearborn at the time, and even though my business was successful from the get-go, every time I passed the central office building on Michigan Avenue, part of me was still there. And my wife would always tell me, Suzanne would say, well, you're looking back. You're looking at, you know, what you accomplished at Ford. And you still haven't broken. This was several years after I left. I really hadn't cut the ties from Ford Motor Company because it was a great company to work for, and I enjoyed the people. Some of those people that I work with, one in particular, Chuck Forbes, who has the started the theater district downtown Detroit, was my boss at the time, and he was one of my primary mentors, and just a great deal of respect for these guys at Ford. They had tremendous work ethic. They had just been treated well with the Ford Motor Company system, and in turn, they gave me the same privilege.
What did you do, Tony, in 72 when you quit?
Well, the first thing I wanted to do was not work in the house, not because I didn't want to, because my wife, as I said, my wife was extremely supportive. But I wanted to establish a business that looked like a real business, not something that was part-time, and because I was totally committed to this. So I rented an office with two other fellows who were basically draftsmen. They were not architects. I was licensed at the time. And so we had an office that was probably 300 square feet, and the three of us, to save money, the three of us shared the rent. And none of us had a secretary at the time. I did everything myself for my own business, and I basically we worked together, the three of us, in terms of accomplishing, you know, whatever business situations that we had. Then I hired a secretary, which was the first hire that I made in my company. And they were able to use my secretary in terms of any of the billing and so on that they would need done. And ultimately, when things were going well, I bought a building in Dearborn Heights on Ann Arbor Trail, and the two fellows that were with me came with me, and they rented space from me, and the building was big enough. I was working at the time for I was building and doing some design work for the Vic Taney health clubs at the time, and so they were looking for some warehouse space, and so this whole thing worked out very well. I mean, it was a good situation for me because all of the tenants that I had basically paid my rent, so I had little or no overhead after a couple years in business.
Let's jump to the late 70s. You become a pioneer by getting into the fast oil change business. Talk to us about that experience.
Yes, that was really kind of a fluke, the way this thing worked. I the first building that I bought after I bought my office building was a gas station that was close to my home on Telegraph Road. And one of my employees was working in the station at the time, and someone had inquired about leasing the building. And so my employee gave him my name. He called me, and I said, well, you know, what would you... I told him what the rent was and didn't have any problem with that. And I asked him what his business was, what he was planning to do. And he said, well, I'm going to change oil. And I said, well, what else? He said, well, that's it. And I said, well, how do you plan to pay the rent if all you're going to do is change oil? And the fellow, Bob Stowers, at the time, had an MBA from Michigan, I believe, in business, and he said, I've got a pro forma that I made up, and I'd like to present it to you. So a day or two later, he was in my office, presented the business plan, which impressed me. I thought, well, this is really something, because I had had my oil changed in gas stations and so on, and wasn't terribly happy about the way it worked out. So after he presented his business plan, I agreed to lease him my building. The only problem was that we had to spend approximately $45,000 at the time to retrofit this building with a basement, because there was no basement in the building, doors in the back so that people could drive through and so on. So after 3 or 4 months of Bob being rejected by lending institutions, banks, families, so on and so forth, he pleaded with me to, you know, make the leasehold improvements, and I agreed to do that on certain conditions. One was that he would quit his three-piece suit job the day the business opened, and that when I passed there, and I passed there 2 or 3 times a day, because this particular building was halfway between my office and my home. So I said, Bob, when I go by there, I want to see your green pickup truck out there, and I'll know you're in the business, and I want to see you there. And so he agreed to that. And after that, I think after he opened, the rest was history. They did an article about his business, this new business concept, in the Detroit News. And it was in the front page of the business section. They had a photograph of him with his uniform on, with his name on his shirt, and that kind of impressed me. And at that point, he just grew. We had 4 or 5 of these places up within a year or two, and he paid for all the leasehold improvements, and he went on to I set him up so that the business would be purchased by a major corporation. With my training at Ford Motor Company, I could see the benefit of multiple locations, almost like a franchise kind of a thing. And so, you know, I set him up with an image. He hired my attorney, he hired my CPA, and after 3 or 4 years, about 3 years, Quaker State came along, and they brought he and his attorney and his accountant. They flew him to Oil City, Pennsylvania, and they made him an offer that he actually refused. But when they got back, after consideration, Bob had some health issues. He had ulcers and some other minor problems. But anyway, as much as he loved the business, he decided to sell, and he became instantly wealthy. Moved to Florida, and one of the American success stories. He did very well for himself.
And you're another American success story. Tony Rea, and I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to Tony Rea. Tony, you're the president, owner, founder of Area Construction, Inc. Talk to us about that, please.
Yes, well, that was the business that I started out with. And I was really fortunate, because one of my first clients was the Vic Canny Health Clubs. And that they were having problems with their existing contractor. And these health clubs historically have a certain ambiance that they like to project, a certain image. And they were having problems with not only the other contractor in terms of what he was contributing to the construction, but so they hired me based on my background at Ford. And we established a very good relationship. And they were extremely demanding. The owner at the time, Roy Zerkowski, was very demanding, and I was up to the challenge. I needed the business. The business was there, and they were expanding. And I can remember in one particular instance, Roy was single at the time, and he had his mind 24/7 on his business. And he would call me at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, get me out of bed, and he'd say, Tony, what are you doing? Well, you know, my logical answer would be, I'm sleeping. But Roy didn't want to hear that, I'm sure. I knew Roy quite well at that time. And I'd say, Roy, what do you need? He said, well, I've got an idea about our Dearborn store, or whatever store it was that we were working on at the time. Can you come and meet me? And I said, where? And he was living downtown at the time. And he said, meet me in an hour at, you know, some breakfast place that was open 24/7. And I would go down there and we would talk about the, you know, what his ideas were. So that relationship and with the ability for me to basically meet his needs worked out well for both of us. And I did quite a few health clubs, and it was good for them, and I believe, and it was good for my business, and I was able to hire some people and a staff, and it worked out very well. So, and at that time, Jack, what was happening? I was mostly working. My income was being generated by the construction company. And as I was able to accumulate some equity, I started buying other buildings. And so over the years, since 1972, we've become more of a developer. I think most of the, about 80% of our work that we do now is through our development company, buildings that I own, just like the oil changes, and I lease back to tenants. And the construction business, I still have a clientele that I still service, and there's other potential construction business projects that we look at and bid, and if we're successful, we build them. But fortunately, in this environment, I'm not totally dependent on the construction business anymore.
From your parents, you got a tremendous work ethic, tremendous can-do attitude, great business sense, and also a sense of giving back. You're very charitable. Why, Tony?
Well, my wife and I have always strongly believed in giving back to the community, particularly since we've been so blessed. And our marriage, our children, our business, and it's you know, one of the things that that we've noticed is that the more you give, the more you receive. In terms of blessings, in terms of just being thankful for everything that you've got. And so, you know, Suzanne, for example, when before we had our kids, and even after we had just one or our first two kids, Suzanne spent time at the soup kitchen in Detroit. She worked there and for quite a few days, and during the, you know, the time that we had our younger kids. And she also every year organizes some of her lady friends to put together hats, scarves, coats, mittens, and so on for one of the charities in Pontiac. And I've been involved in a few charitable boards that I've served on. And they've all been rewarding. These are charities that we firmly believe in, and I think it's we've got a great community here in Detroit. And Jack, we've been to your house many times for some of the charitable organizations that you've been so good to. And so we, as a matter of fact, I was reading an invitation for a charitable organization. And as I'm reading this thing, I realized that this benefit was going to be at my house, and Suzanne had forgot to tell me about it. So anyway, we feel we need to pass this on to our kids, and you really give these things your kids training by example. You have to show them, you know, what you're all about, so that hopefully they will continue the process.
For most of us, God is the spare tire in our life. When something goes wrong, we jump in that trunk, we get that tire out, you know, get me out of this one, help me with this one, and I promise, and I promise. For a few people, he is the steering wheel of our life. And for you, Tony Rea, he is the steering wheel of your life. You're very Christ-centered. Where did that come from?
Well, that initially always comes from your parents, I think, and my parents, my grandparents, And the other thing that was that really just kind of embodied everything that I had learned from my parents was my wife. I think Suzanne is she's a very spiritual lady, and she has given me the encouragement and the desire to do the kinds of things that just enhance your life in terms of your spiritual commitment. We were talking to some friends of ours, and we were talking about vacations, and the one fella was telling us, he said, you know, when we go camping up north, he says Sunday morning comes, and everybody's looking to see where the eggs and bacon are, the fishing, and when we're going to get the out on the boat and so on. He says my dad was out looking to see where church was so we could go to Mass. And that pretty much summarizes our situation. We have our priorities in terms of our faith and our family and our work in that order, and we don't deviate from that.
You currently serve on the audit committee. You're actually the chair of the executive committee of the Papal Foundation.
Yes.
What is that?
The Papal Foundation was started a little over 20 years ago when the Catholic Church through the Vatican was having major requests coming from all over the world, including the United States. And there was really no money to fund all of these requests. So they had organized four very prominent business people in the United States from all over the country. And they had agreed to establish an endowment fund. And the endowment fund, the proceeds from the endowment fund would fund some of these charities and these requests that the Vatican would receive through the Pope's office. And so back about 12 years ago, we were approached by our good friend Fran Sain, who was a member of the Papal Foundation, to join this organization. And it's quite a commitment, financial commitment. There's three of us in the state of Michigan that belong to it, and it's been a wonderful experience for both my wife and I. And we have two meetings a year, one in Washington, D.C., and one at the Vatican in Rome.
We're talking to Tony Rea. When we come back, we'll ask him about starting a business today. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're talking to Tony Rea, who in the late 70s was a pioneer in the fast oil change business. Tony, you've been around a lot of entrepreneurs. You're a serial entrepreneur. What advice would you give to someone today who's thinking about starting a business?
Well, the very first thing that I would tell them, as we had said earlier, is that if you're not prepared to work hard, if you don't have that work ethic, that burning desire to succeed, don't even try. That's the work ethic. The commitment is absolutely essential. The knowledge of your business has to be there. You have to be able to understand the business that you're in if you're going to be successful. And you need a solid business plan, and telling somebody they need a solid business plan doesn't necessarily ring very well with a lot of people that are just starting out, and that's one of the advantages of a franchise. I'm not necessarily promoting franchises, because I think in my experience some of them are good experiences, some of them are not so good. I had one instance where a fellow from Ford Motor Company had taken a buyout, and he had researched. He was young enough to keep working, kids going to college. he decided to research these franchises, and he wound up with a franchise who had negotiated a lease with one of my buildings in the service facility, car repair. And so the last act of this franchise agreement was when the actual franchisee came in to see me to sign a lease. So I sat him down and I said, what's your experience in the service business? Well, he didn't have any. I said, well, what did you do at Ford? Well, he was an electrician, maintenance guy. And I said, well, how are you going to operate this business if you don't know the mechanical service business, the car repair business? And he said, well, franchisee is going to hire, a counter writer for me, and he'll write up all the service requests. And I said, what about the mechanics? Well, they're going to hire mechanics for me. And and talking to this fellow for about a half an hour, I realized that he wasn't going to make it. And I tried to tell him in so many words, even though I was potentially going to lose a tenant, that this wasn't going to work. And but he signed a lease, and he got little or no backup from the franchisor. And 4 months later, he was in my office wanting to get out. And I just, I felt sorry for the guy. He had already spent his money with a franchise, buying the franchise, buying the equipment, doing whatever he had to do to get in business. So it's very important that you know the business. It's extremely important. And there has to be a certain consistency in the business that you operate, so that you don't have a revolving door with employees or personnel. You have to know your customer base. You have to treat your employees and your customers with every respect that you can show them, because your employees and your customers are what makes your business. And but you have to be there. When your customers call, of the time when a customer calls, they have to have, they want to talk to the owner. They want to talk to the guy that's there. So you have to be there to be able to respond to their requests. And one of the other problems that I've noticed is that some of these startup businesses, that they get a little cocky in terms of, well, I'm in business for myself now, and I can go out and I can spend some money. That you don't spend what you don't have. You take care of your expenses. You take care of your employees. You take care of your business, and the rest will come. And the other thing is that there's so much competition in any business, that whether it's restaurant business, service business, oil change business, you have to go one step beyond your competition for your customer and for your employees, and you have to be in a position to let them know that you're going to be there for the long haul.
Everybody that's successful can talk to a couple people, or about a couple people that were mentors, encouragers. You've done that a lot. If there's somebody out there that says, I need a mentor, Tony, how does that person find a mentor?
I think just by observing what that mentor has done. I've had several mentors in my life, and they lead by example. They are the people that they walk the walk, and they don't just say that there's good things to do and good things that need to be done. They actually do it. And I'll give you an example. Tom Monahan, I'm on his board for his university, and I have the utmost respect for Tom, because he's one of the few people that have put his fortune into what he strongly believes in. And there's other people in my life, like Chuck Forbes, and that I had mentioned earlier, and Fran Sain. These guys have all done wonderful things. Chuck has done tremendous things, Chuck Forbes, for the city of Detroit. And I think if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have Comerica Park where it is, and we wouldn't have Ford Field where it is. And you fly with eagles, and you're going to flop with turkeys. So you follow the eagles.
Is the American dream still alive, Tony Rea?
Absolutely, without a doubt. I have tenants now today that are expanding. I have these are mostly younger fellows and ladies, and they just have a burning desire to succeed, and it's there. If they want to put their effort out, they can achieve it.
We're going through challenging times right now. You've gone through challenging times in your career. How did you get through? Where did you get the resilience to hang on?
The fact that I, when times are good, you can't overspend. You can't think that, this gravy train is going to last forever. You need to have a certain reserve. You need to have a comfort level so that you're not overextended. You're not spending, in the future. And you have to absolutely maintain a solid, conservative view of where your finances are, and work with the lending institutions and prove to them that you're willing to work hard.
Last question: what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Follow your dream. If you have a situation that you firmly believe in, and work for it. Don't just dream about it. Go out and don't think that you're going to start at the top. You start at the bottom, and I can't tell you how many stories I've read about people that started in the absolute bottom and worked their way up to become presidents of companies, and they may have been cleaning the floors or whatever. So don't let anything intimidate you in terms of what your potential is, because the American dream is alive and well.
Tony Rea, you've done phenomenal things in your life, but most importantly, it's how you've done them and how you've given back. Thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.